It's 5 minutes with me.
Welcome, a warmest welcome to you, my friend, to the most absurdly short podcast in the youth ministry world, at least. I don't know. I'm just making declarative statements. We are on part 11, week 11 of our Nuggets series. It's the second to last one. I'm starting to dread the end of it. Three Nuggets today. Three disconnected little mini thoughts. Here we go. Number one, the setting for this story was a cohort of our youth ministry coaching program. And during our round the horn time of sharing highs and lows of the past month, as well as reporting on homework, one of the guys shared a bit of input he'd received from somebody that in the midst of a particular decision he was trying to make, he found shaping and instructive. It struck me as brilliant input, and I quickly jotted it down. Here it is. Ready? You don't lack the ability to make the decision. What you lack is the willingness to make the wrong decision. Let me say it again, because it's just powerful. You don't lack the ability to make the decision. What you lack is the willingness to make the wrong decision. Man, that is it. That's what so often keeps me frozen in the process of decision-making. My fear over loss or scrutiny or embarrassment or the potential of spilled milk. And I see this over and over again with leaders of all sorts, including youth workers. Great leaders are willing to make the wrong decision. And of course, to own it when wrong decisions are made rather than pointing at others or external factors. This isn't a cry for impulsivity or a cavalier approach to decision-making that ignores potential hurt or mess. Instead, it's an invitation to move out of that frozen place of indecision with a willingness to risk. What are you willing to make, or are you willing to make the wrong decision? Nugget number two. I used to have a fairly regular path. I would drive once or twice a week for a particular reason, and I would pass this fairly good-sized shuttered church on this route. It's a fairly good-sized building and on a fairly prime piece of land with thousands of people who see it every day. And every time I see this building with the sign that is clear that it's closed, I experience a jumble of thoughts and emotions. Sometimes the feeling is sadness. The church was in an amazing neighborhood. It's not an amazing neighborhood if you're hoping for homogeneous, white, and affluent, but it's a gorgeous neighborhood with fantastic diversity in both economic and racial ways, plus a big dose of college students from nearby San Diego State University. It's mostly a family neighborhood with small mid-century homes. Right behind the church is a very large park that is always, and I mean always, without exception, teeming with people at all hours of the day and evening. But even with all the life in this neighborhood, this church closed. I don't know their story, but I can certainly imagine one that includes a dwindling and literally dying congregation of white octogenarians, unwilling or incapable of being good news to their neighborhood. Fear of change. Refusal to change. What a crappy way to die. If this is the story, the church building is now just a big, ugly tombstone shouting out to the thriving neighborhood, "We didn't care about you." My response isn't always sadness, though, when I see this place. Sometimes I chuckle. It's a dark humor, to be sure, but there's some great irony in a closed church with the words "open doors" on its sign. Sometimes it makes me angry. This response isn't all that different than the sadness response, just kind of a different place on the scale, I suppose. Sometimes I find it horribly, uncomfortably convicting. Really, sometimes I can barely bring myself to drive by that stupid closed sign. All the sadness and snarky, dark humor and anger, that's all easy finger pointing. It's very natural for me to assume unwillingness or hard-heartedness or selfishness on the part of others. It's simple to imagine one of the possible scenarios above for two reasons. First, so common. And second, I have a cynical finger-pointing heart. The more dangerous question than why did the church close is, in what ways am I living like that imaginary congregation? How am I undermining the I don't care about you message that would result in an empty, closed building in terms of my own faith and relationships and neighborhood and world? Whew. Okay, nugget number three. Some time ago at a cohort meeting of youth ministry coaching program in Nashville, during a conversation about seniors, high school seniors, and their second semester fading away from what was previously a high commitment to the youth ministry, one of the guys suggested a very intriguing idea. We all know that seniors are super busy. We all know they have extra pressures. We all know that they're distracted. But here was the fantastic question this guy posed. Could the drop-off of seniors be a factor of them distancing themselves in preparation for the forced separation of graduating out of our groups? Man, that sure reframes things. I mean, think of it this way. Lame ducks almost always fade. Heck, the vast majority of youth workers I know who are moving to another church have a hard time maintaining passion and energy in their current role, even if they still genuinely care for the church and students. If we think of seniors in this light, I wonder if it would give us more compassion for them rather than guilting or cajoling I hear from so many youth workers. Instead of how can I get you to come to youth group, our question becomes how can I serve you in this transition?
The Youth Cartel Podcast Network.